You're listening to Make It Thrive, the company culture podcast. I'm your host, Lizzie Benton, company culture coach and founder of Liberty Mind, and I want to inspire people to create progressive company cultures where our human potential can thrive. In this podcast, I talk to organizations, thought leaders, and change makers about the impact of company culture. Together, we can make it thrive. This year, Make It Thrive is supporting Teal Around the World, one of the biggest conferences dedicated to the Teal philosophy. With around 5,000 participants since it first started, Teal Around the World brings together keynote speakers, practical workshops, and storytelling sessions, gathering experienced pioneers and thought leaders like Frederick Laloux, Jos and Thijs de Blok, Gary Hamel, Doug Kirkpatrick, Daniela Lander, and Ricardo Semler, sharing their stories based on practical experiences ranging from startups to huge corporations. Thanks to Teal Around the World, attendees have been empowered to start a change within themselves and their spheres of influence. Now, entering a new era, Teal Around the World would like to bring inspiration to real life. The best part being real connection, building relationships, and creating a network of possibilities. In 2025, Teal Around the World will adopt a hybrid format. Global hubs in different locations all around the world will host local keynotes and storytellers live on stage. This conference will give a chance for participants to experience hands-on workshops in small groups, short speaker reflection sessions, holistic and out-of-the-box experiences, whilst having people from other parts of the globe join virtually. If you'd like to know more, please check out their website in the show notes or consider donating to their crowdfunding page. We hope you'll join us on a venture to change the world. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Make It Thrive, where this season we're trying to make the intangible more tangible. I feel like this episode is one we're all going to deeply relate to, because on this episode, I'm joined by uncertainty expert Catherine Templar-Lewis. Catherine is like a punk rebel scientist. I know that if I had her teaching me at school, I'd probably have done much better in science. As a human scientist, Catherine's work spans behavioral psychology, neuroscience, neuroaesthetics, and cognition. An expert in the human mind and how to navigate a modern world, she is dedicated to bringing science and creative thinking together to address the challenges we face. And one of the major challenges of our time is the amount of uncertainty we face. We all face uncertainty in both our personal lives and our work lives. But how do we know when we're in uncertainty? And what can we do to manage uncertainty when we all live with it constantly? Well, in this episode, Catherine is going to share her knowledge with us and give us all some practical steps. So let's dive in.
Hi, Catherine, and welcome to Make It Thrive, the company culture podcast.
Hello, hello. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Oh, well, after attending the Uncertainty Experts program, I just had to get you on to talk about uncertainty. And as this season is all about taking the intangible and making it tangible, I thought this topic was perfect for this season. So in terms of uncertainty, let's start at the obvious question. What is uncertainty, if you have a definition for it?
Yeah. That's a great question, actually, and something we're always trying to solve. Everything I do is sort of slightly through the lens of science and neuroscience. So for me, it's any situation where the brain doesn't have information. So it could be that it's something you're addressing that's completely new. It could be something where you don't know the outcome, where you have to take a risk. But it's all change, newness, and suddenly not being sure. Now, of course, when you define it like that, it's sort of every moment that we live in the day is full of uncertainty. And that's actually correct. Uncertainty is fundamental, and our brain has evolved to address it in numerous ways, some good, some bad. And that was exactly where we started this program, with the understanding that people don't naturally think they need to know how to navigate uncertainty. But actually, it's just a fundamental sort of fabric of life is uncertainty. And when you're aware of how to navigate it, then you can navigate it well.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I mean, it's really come at a perfect time, obviously, because we've just gone through 2 years of huge uncertainty. And now we're living in a time that's so complex and uncertain that it seems like we're always increasing constantly experiencing all these different circumstances and situations that are even on a global scale, not even on a local scale. So it seems like now more than ever that uncertainty and understanding how we deal with uncertainty is almost like a key human skill we need to be adopting.
Yeah, absolutely that. And I think when we started this project, people weren't really talking about uncertainty. And now, you know, maybe it's because I'm doing this project, I see it everywhere. You know, there's a thing called the Uncertainty Index, the Global Uncertainty Index, and it sort of charts uncertainty through looking at key metrics and across news and things like that. And it states that right now we're in one of the most uncertain times in the whole of human history. Now, you could argue that if I've just said everything is uncertain, how can that come about? But I think you identified it really well. We are now more aware and in contact. Like every day we are bombarded with more people, communications, more awareness of the world around us. So we're coming into contact with more and more data points, more and more people, more and more concepts. And so all these uncertainties are being uncovered. And I think there's a great need and desire, or has been in the past, to make things certain. We like it when things are certain. And I think especially with the background and with the pandemic now sort of becoming part of our history, it really uncovered and showed us, you know, this fundamental uncertainty all around us.
So I have to ask, Catherine, how on earth did you land in uncertainty in this realm of knowledge?
It really was, I think it's looking back, you realize that sometimes, in fact, all my research has often been led by the things I think I need to learn for myself. And I do it under this guise, very much like Sam Conniff, I worked on this project, as we're doing this for other people. And then you look back and you're like, oh, I think I made the project that I needed. And I was at the time, I was studying cognitive science, and I've always worked with creatives my whole life, trying to accelerate neuroscience out of the labs and into the public domain through creative projects. And when the pandemic hit, I actually was studying something different. I was studying anxiety, really aware of such this huge sort of anxiety pandemic that we have right now and the impacts and how to solve that. When Sam contacted me, I didn't know who he was. I just knew he did something about pirates and said, I want to create a psychological intervention. I want to help people navigate uncertainty, and I don't want to do it in a sort of therapy style way. I want to do it through the lessons of these incredible sort of outsider people, ex-gang leaders, refugees. Can you help me? And I sort of said, well, uncertainty isn't a thing, anxiety is. But when we started doing the research, we realized that yes, uncertainty leads to anxiety, but it can also really reduce our ability to be creative, our ability to problem solve, our ability to make decisions for ourselves that help us get towards our goal. So because it was also a pandemic, and at the time I had just started a woman-led studio and made a sort of, you know, vow that I was only working with women here on in, having decided that having been in a very male-dominant environment, especially within the sciences, that was my remit. And I sort of went, oh, damn, because you're like a white, middle-aged, middle-class male, and that's completely against what I've just set up a studio and lab about. But it was a very interesting project. So, and you know, it was the pandemic and my lab was shut. So I said, okay, we'll come and investigate uncertainty. And what, because we have no leaders that at the time were displaying uncertainty. And I think a lot of corporations were struggling with uncertainty and uncertain futures very dramatically in the pandemic. And we thought, what can we learn from other people? And that's where Sam was really interesting. He had been meeting and talking to a range of what he called the uncertainty experts, people who were sort of in leadership positions, but not conventional leadership, from Buddhist monks who had once been sort of in prison, to gang leaders who are now reformed, to people, so refugees who had incredible migration stories, who are now lawyers, who had through extreme uncertainty learned to navigate it very well. And the idea, you know, we learn from stories better than anything else, you know, far better than things like school. You know, what can we learn from these people? And then can we work out what those psychological tools they have are and teach them to other people? It sounds coherent when you look back on it. At the time, it was a mad panic in the pandemic where, you know, we were just testing out loads of things, had no idea where we were going, and were sitting in like an uncertainty soup.
Oh, but it's really interesting that you pick up on that though, Catherine, in terms of what you mentioned earlier about the anxiety being very predominant. You know, when we talk about things like what's getting in the way for us, or the epidemic that's going on, so much is around mental health and anxiety. And it's so rare to hear about uncertainty, even though it is so prevalent and so you know, it really does then feed into that anxiety. And so I suppose the question for I have is, building up this uncertainty awareness, you know, it's almost like we need to be aware that there is such thing as high levels of uncertainty in order to tackle it in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was the piece that was hardest to start with, is to show people that, you know, uncertainty is called a transdiagnostic problem. And all that means is that it sits beneath all these other symptoms that we've been trying to tackle, from low innovation, from narrow-mindedness, to high anxiety, to low creativity, to sort of this stasis, feeling stuck and unable to make decisions. Burnout can often be driven by an inability to cope with uncertainty. And what the psychology and the research was showing, that this intolerance of uncertainty, this inability to remain or endure in uncertain times without feeling highly anxious, was sort of shutting us down. And it really evolved around this bad relationship we have with uncertainty. And that sort of filters through, I think, even into our culture. You know, everything is about trying to be certain. And I think especially within companies and leaderships, you know, we think of a leader as being able to be certain and know what to do. We don't have a very good ability to hold space of doubt or say, I don't know. You know, we're told that we have to make decisions, and we have to make decisions fast, you know, make decisions, fail fast, all these things. And so understanding that we have a slightly broken relationship with uncertainty. And once you admit it, you can change it. If you don't realize that your brain's always naturally going to dislike uncertainty, your brain simply tries to keep you safe at all times. So there's a very sort of primal part of your brain that any uncertain situation, it goes, oh, I don't have information for this. Right, run away, you know, and we're always going to feel uneasy uncertainty. But unfortunately, if we sort of give into that by seeking fake certainty in quick decisions, backward looking decisions, doing what's been done before, hiding away from it, you know, you don't evolve, because it's in times of uncertainty that we also know the brain has this amazing capacity to be agile, to adapt. And that can ladder up from just an individual to a team and its ability to problem solve and be creative and innovative, to a company and its sort of ability to evolve in this sort of new era that we're entering. So it's really about getting people to understand they have a bad relationship with uncertainty, but that's okay. That's just your brain trying to keep you safe, and that changing it can actually help us be more innovative.
I must admit, when I did the program, I really thought to myself, eating a bit of humble pie here, I was like, I'm super resilient. I was like, this, I'm just gonna like fly through this. Like, I can safely say that some of the stats that came through when I first did the report before, because obviously you do the report before and after to see where you shift, I was so surprised at myself. And actually, when I really sat back in that kind of moment of self-awareness, where you think, actually, in some situations and circumstances, I'm really comfortable with uncertainty. In other situations, I really rough up against it and I really dislike it, and it can really send me spiraling into kind of like this control freak mode, which I know I have a tendency for. So it was really interesting, actually, even as someone who, I would say I love my personal development, I am generally very self-aware, it was really good to do, because I think it just brought me back down to, okay, yeah, there's clearly some areas here where I need to actually pick up the ball on.
Yeah, I think it's a really lovely sort of self-awareness piece. And I will be the first to put my hand up and say, I hate change. I really panic at it. You know, I really don't do good in uncertainty. I think I'm a little better now. So, you know, and that was the interesting thing, that we were like, right, we need to work out the tools to navigate uncertainty. We want to teach them in a sort of interactive course. And you were very lucky, we got a lot of funding from Netflix, who were like, yes, let's make this interactive documentary, which you came aboard. So you're watching these characters tell their stories, then you're answering questions. And then being a scientist, I was like, right, let's just test people's tolerance of uncertainty across these four sort of very dry, sorry about the questions, academics, but very valid scales, and see if they do change. And I think, you know, science doesn't always go that well. We don't always get scores like that change. And I think that was the point in the pandemic, when we realized this was having an impact and people's scores were changing. Their ability to stay in a moment of uncertainty without high anxiety was changing because of this course. You know, and it's been so exciting this year to work with people like Lego, with Unilever, you know, looking into how could we do this in a company? What would happen if we could increase people's tolerance to uncertainty? How much more, I mean, first it's just reducing anxiety and burnout, but then how much more creative and innovative could we make people? And I think that to me is really exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. So I suppose if you had to put uncertainty into kind of a nutshell to explain it to people, what are the things they should be looking out for?
Yeah, I think the interesting thing, so we started this whole project with sort of research into how people were reacting to uncertainty. And it was really grouped into these three sort of reactive states. And the first is fear. That sounds a bit serious, but it's actually, that can be anything from anxiousness to a bit of a panic. And then the second is a fog. You know, the fog descends and you don't quite know, you know, where you want to go. And the second is the stasis and you feel stuck. The dangers of these states are that within, if you're having a fear reaction or an anxiety reaction to uncertainty or a moment of uncertainty, and that could be anything. It could be opening an email and being asked to deliver a report and actually not knowing how you're going to do it. It could be, you know, wanting to move jobs but not knowing where to go, stepping into the unknown. It could be a new structure that's coming in work, you know, internal transformation, and not really knowing what the other side of that's going to look like. If you sort of give in to the panic, if you can't manage it, or if you just let it sort of, if you react subconsciously, your brain will automatically want to take you to a place of safety. And that normally means avoiding the situation altogether. My favorite is just, I just procrastinate at that point. I get very busy and involved in other things. You know, over at home, it's just a glass of wine normally. That makes you feel great. Very safe. Or it's becoming slightly more sort of aggressive in conflict and your empathy starts to drop, and that could be dangerous on a team as well. You know, or you just quickly make a decision and do what's been done before. And if you're sort of, you know, if there's a team involved in a creative organization, that can be a bit dangerous as well. You're not being as innovative. Then you enter the next stage, which is the fog, where your brain doesn't have any information to, because your brain is a prediction machine trying to make predictions, enters the fog, doesn't have any information because things are a bit different. And it's sort of, it's a dividing path. It's a bit like the Matrix, blue pill, red pill. And if your tolerance of uncertainty is high, your brain goes, great, I need to absorb more information. I need to find people who have different knowledge to me. And you become highly open-minded, highly open to new things. But if you've already sort of started to get anxious and you have a bad relationship with uncertainty, you become very narrow-minded. And to make yourself feel safe, you're like, I will only seek out people who have exactly the same view as me because that will make me feel better. And that's when you fall into sort of groupthink, or you don't leverage diversity within an organization, and that can impact things like ED&I. And then the third stasis, of course, the first state is stasis. And once you get there, if you have a bad relationship with uncertainty, you will either just make any decision to make a decision and move forward, or you get stuck because you don't want to make a decision. And that's the most interesting bit to me, because people who have higher tolerances to uncertainty then start to leverage all sorts of amazing abilities within the body, like gut instinct and intuition. Mm. And what's been interesting in the press is watching people like the Harvard Business Review now label gut instinct, you know, and tolerance of uncertainty as sort of key skills for this century. So it's really sort of teaching people this skill package of what we need to do. And it's all highly trainable.
Yeah, I think that's what I was also really, taken aback by when I was doing the programme, that, you know, so many of these skills and techniques that you're learning are things that you hear so much about in kind of mindfulness, or, you know, that it's not kind of anything excessive. They're just practice or habits. And once we can ingrain those, they're kind of become the toolbox for us to help with uncertainty.
Yeah. And I think it really helps that there's a lot of sort of, we explain things in the brain and the science. The characters in the course are wonderful and so engaging and so powerful. But sort of realizing, you know, I was always a bit allergic to what I would call like woo, basically. And I was like, oh, mindfulness, I don't need to do it. You know, you see me now, I get up in the morning, I do some breath work. I really do some breath work, and then I do a bit of, this is my year, I'm going to try and do meditation. I'm not very good at it. But because, you know, these, even things like gratitude, these tiny tools that we teach through the course, they really do work. And all my work on neuroscience and the nervous system, you know, it's all about regulating those emotions to keep your mind clear. We all know what it's like when we become overwhelmed and we can't think straight. But if you can start at that base level, and all these things that you sort of, you know, inherently, to know why they work and how they work, you know, and it's a wonderful time, I think, where we're suddenly working with big companies like Google and Apple, and I'm walking into to rooms of sort of, you know, leaders and men who are maybe in their 50s and talking about sort of breath work and the importance about emotional intuition. And I think that is really exciting, that understanding that all these things matter at a leadership level, at a decision-making level, at a problem-solving level, mm-hmm. you know, so yeah.
It is, and it's, you know, it's really exciting for you to hear that it's been taken seriously, like you mentioned, the Harvard Business School, because mm-hmm. I remember years ago reading something, clearly an awful business book, but it was something like gut instinct is given up thinking. And I was like, oh my goodness, that tagline infuriated me so much.
Yeah, it's an amazing guy called Antonio Damasio, who wrote a book called Descartes' Error, all about this. He did a study of people who had lost the ability to have a sort of gut instinct and intuition, and they couldn't even sort of decide what to have for breakfast. You know, emotions is so key. You know, another wonderful study of Wall Street traders. It turned out, this is Sarah Garfinkel at Sussex University, that the key to their success in making money was their ability to have a sense called interoception, which is your ability to sense and name your emotions. So the better they were at feeling their emotions, the more money they made, because it fed a really accurate intuition. Oh. And so, you know, that's the line between actually sort of emotions and intuition and making money at the end of the day.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. And when you put it like that as well, it's so shocking to think that we're still not sort of taking emotions and these kind of, you know, areas as seriously in workplace culture. And like you said something earlier about, you know, the fact that we're kind of conditioned to be certain, and that happens at such a young age, right? Even before you leave school, it's like you have to be certain about what you're going to do when you leave school. You, like all these kind of social conditionings of that certainty is better value, like that, you know, you're of higher value to people when you're certain.
We did an amazing study that was around actually business leaders, as well as, you know, employees. And I think it was about 80% of them would rather make a decision and it later be wrong than say, I don't know, and say, we need some time to work this out. So it goes right through to that leadership level. And I think there's two things at play there. There's an inability, and we can see it in politics and everywhere, to sort of say, I don't know. We always say, you know, I don't know, but let's work it out together. Which is, you know, sort of to hold that space. And also this, you know, and I think this is happening as well in things like HR, you know, this understanding that emotion is not just the realm of sort of well-being and company culture. Mm-hmm. It's actually well-being can impact, you know, decision-making, leadership, innovation. And it's been, you know, I'm really supportive of this, you know, shift from sort of HR being actually a strategic move. Helping people with their emotions is really fundamental.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one thing that I found really interesting, to sort of going back to that idea that so much of this is habitual and practice, like they're practices that we can all implement, whether it's within the workplace, whether it's at home, we can all kind of implement these uncertainty practices. I suppose you mentioned there about kind of, you know, some people are a little bit anti-mindfulness, a bit woo. And, you know, one thing I really enjoyed about the program of Uncertainty Experts was the science that you kind of explained. It's kind of science I wish I'd been taught at school, though. You know, like, this is way more interesting than what I learned at school. Like, I love this. I could totally watch more of this. So I kind of wish you were there at school, to be honest, Catherine. I would have probably done a lot better in my GCSEs.
Thank you.
But I suppose my question is, what is something that surprised you the most from those uncertainty experts who were sharing? You know, they, like you mentioned, they're some incredible people who have gone through some of the most extreme experiences, you know, gang crime, you know, all sorts of immigration challenges, you know, all of those things. What is something that really surprised you about some of the habits that they were talking about?
I think what was really sort of amazing and interesting was the way they evolved a lot of these tools. Sort of, they just emerged because of necessity. And I think one thing they all shared was an awareness, a self-awareness that a lot of people, you know, including myself, probably don't have, an awareness of how they were reacting to situations and understanding they needed to change it if they were going to go forward. You know, Carl Loco, who at one time was labeled London's number one gangster and has now become an incredible CEO and social entrepreneur, you know, you would think he would be the sort of first person to say he never felt any fear. He quite openly admits that he always felt very afraid, you know, but he understood that that fear would take him away from the things that he needed to do and wanted to do. And so he developed this amazing ability to really recognize his fear rather than shut it down, to sort of befriend it. And we know from neuroscience that the minute you start to be able to sit with your emotions and recognize them, even label them, you start to get mastery over them and you notice them, but they don't affect you as much. You know, and he did things like ground himself in his body, where he used to push his tongue against the back of his teeth, which is, you know, very common grounding exercises to hold something so that you bring yourself into the present moment. And I think sort of those little tricks that they developed themselves were really interesting. Mm-hmm. And the sort of almost diligence that they worked on them. And I think in the course, you know, we give people these tools and we say, you really do have to start to put them into practice. And then it does become habitual. You know, Carl actually speaks, he said, you know, my brain grew like a muscle, and that's neuroplasticity. We know that the more you do these little tricks and tools, your brain sort of adapts and they become much more innate and natural. It does become easier. You know, Rez Gardi, who was amazing, she was a refugee and she's become a huge human rights lawyer, said, you know, to fine-tune her intuition, every situation she was in, she sat down afterwards and reflected on it and thought, what did my gut instinct tell me? What did I, you know, get right? What did I get wrong? So they really understood these tools needed to be developed. It needed awareness, reflection. And I think that really surprised me, because I think it's a good lesson for us all that we do need to take the time to reflect. We do need to take the time to actively put things into practice. And I think we rush through our world without, you know, we're not. I watch my niece, you know, learning to skateboard, and it's such a lesson in perseverance. I think I would have given up, you know, the first day. We're not very used to, as adults, putting these into practice and having to be a bit bad at them and get better at them. So I think that was a very humbling moment that all these uncertainty experts had done that.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? I think we get to a certain age where we no longer become the beginner anymore, and we don't want that kind of, the awkwardness and the discomfort of being a beginner. But it provides us with so much ability to growth and new understanding of self-awareness. And, you know, it's like I promised myself that I would learn some French this year, and that would be an interesting revolution to see what happens with my neuroplasticity as I'm learning French. But yeah, it's really interesting that we still kind of, you know, I love putting myself in that beginner spot, and that's why I think it's sometimes important for us to take ourselves back a step back sometimes in order to be able to step forward.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good reason why, like, a meta lesson for uncertainty, because we know the more we put ourselves outside our comfort zone, the easier it becomes anyway, just in general in uncertainty, you know, whether that's tiny little things or larger things, you know. And I think the brain doesn't really know if you're at home or work, you know, it's going to react in the same way often. So the skills, you know, what I love about this is we go into corporations and work with sort of individuals at an employee level, but then they say, actually, I use this at home in my relationship, and or I taught it to my kids because it's sort of super relevant. And I'm like, oh yeah, of course, it's, you know, you can use these tricks anywhere.
Absolutely. I know one thing that I suppose that comes to my mind is what you mentioned earlier about change and how uncertainty and change and how we see so much of that. But something that happens quite a lot and we hear quite a lot is that people don't like change. So it's almost like, I suppose, trying to understand actually with uncertainty how we can cope also with change, because change has to happen constantly, right? Yeah. Not only, you know, in our world, but also in our lives, you know, like even individually, we go through so many changes in our lifetime. So there are so many perspectives that we can put this uncertainty lens on.
Yeah, it's interesting, even thinking, you know, as a woman and the different stages you go through, which are radically different as a woman, you know, and men do as well, of course. But I think, you know, being a woman, I'm probably more hyper aware of them. And I think it's a really good thing to remember that uncertainty is also change and when things are different. Mm. And a lot of companies are going through a lot of change right now. There's also, you know, a big drive for ED&I, and what does that look like? And that's the sort of fourth level of, there's different types of change in the sort of psychological models. And the type of change that is and that we often face is it's called teleological change, where I'm like, I'm okay right now. I know where everything is. I've been told that I've got to get to that stage and that will be better for me. And I buy into that. However, to get there, I have to go from this stable state into a sea of uncertainty. and then get used to the new way of things. And that is hard because you're asking someone to go through a sort of unsettled stage. Yeah. And we become very, and what the problem is, I think, especially within companies, is that people have a resistance to it. They don't want to say it. They can be very creative in their resistance, you know, adversarial resistance people get very creative about, because you don't want to admit that you don't want to change. Because especially, let's say, you know, Edie and I know that that state is better, where we have better equity. And so I don't want to be seen to be opposed to that. But what actually we're teaching people, they're not opposed to that at all. What they're having a reaction to is that state of instability they have to go through. So being able to help someone endure that state and say, look, we can help you reduce the anxiety that you'll feel as you go through that sort of uncertainty gap. We'll give you some tools to help you, you know, keep an eye on your own goals and go in the right direction. And I think that can then be applied to any stage of your life. You know, it's like moving house is the fourth most stressful thing in the world or something. Holidays is up there as well. Because you know you want that new house, but you also know you have to go through that absolute nightmare of packing. It's like the Big Bang. Everything explodes before it gets neater again. You know, and that's the bit people don't want to do. Of course, everyone knows the new house will be lovely when you get there. So, you know, that's, if you think of that model for all the different things and change, from whether it's like a teenager leaving school to finding a new job, you know, refocusing people's relationship with uncertainty and telling them it's just helping us being able to be in that, traverse that gap, I think really helps. Because I'm like, oh, okay, I do want the new state. I just need support getting there.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know, it's really interesting because I think something we talk about regularly in terms of the sort of company culture realm and kind of shifting into kind of new ways of working or doing things differently, it's always around change. And what I really saw when I was doing the uncertainty experts is it's almost like we need to do some uncertainty training before we go on the organizational shift.
Yes. And I think it is, you know, and it's exactly that, and trying to, you know, show companies that it's just giving people the tools and support, not for the final state, but for the journey there.
Yeah.
You know, once we're settled in, our brains actually can adapt quite well to new things. You know, that's why we're at the top of the food chain. But what we have a natural allergy to is when things are all around us shifting and changing, simply because it's harder for your brain to keep you safe, which is its sort of primal job. And it does that by trying to make predictions about what's about to happen and keep you prepared. When things are shifting a lot around you, it finds it hard to do, and it can find that really stressful. But if you actually embrace that state, you look for the possibility, you know your goals, you're managing your anxiety, and then it becomes this sort of rather joyous state of possibility, and you can evolve and grow in a state of uncertainty in a way you simply can't when things are certain.
Absolutely. So for those who are perhaps unsure about what this uncertainty experts is, Catherine, are you able to give us a bit of a lowdown on what it is and share with our audience?
I've been working on how to define this. Because once you've told people that, you know, once they understand that uncertainty, I have a broken relationship with uncertainty. So in short, what we created out of all this research and information was a three-part interactive course. You know, you take it online, it presents a little bit like a documentary. You meet this range of amazing characters over three episodes. And in each one, you learn about how they navigated uncertainty. I'm then there, that's presented by Sam Conniff, he's the host of that part. I come in and talk about what's happening in your own brain in moments of uncertainty. And then we guide you through some tools on how to, in the first one we look at fear, the second episode we look at the fog, and we look at like more cognitive tools. The first one's more sort of emotional tools. And then the third one is about decision making and how to make better decisions. We also use sort of, rather new to use QR codes 5 years ago. Now everyone's with a QR code, to ask you sort of self-reflection questions to help you sort of embed the learning. We've got bonus material. And my favorite bit, which is the assessment. We give you a completely anonymized assessment. So we're working with UCL, looking on the impact of uncertainty before and after, so that you get a report showing your uncertainty tolerance broken down into different categories, how good you are at handling your emotions, how good you are at taking risks, how open-minded you are, things like that. And you can watch them shift. And you can take part as an individual or you can take part as a company. And we've been rolling out live programs, sort of programs people do in their own time. We're about to start working with young people. We've been doing a free program with the NHS and teachers, looking at frontline workers and how we can help them. So it's been really exciting. UCL is running all our research at the brain science department. So it now is the world's largest scientific experiment in uncertainty, which is really exciting.
That's incredible.
And the results have been amazing. 95% of people have increased their uncertainty tolerance who've come through the program, which has been wild. And so, yeah, and this year we're working with a lot of big companies to look at how we can, exactly as you said, work with their teams to sort of prepare them for changes to come.
Oh my goodness, that is a phenomenal achievement, guys. That is absolutely incredible.
I know, I was really excited. I was just wondering if my mother would ever listen to this. One of the first five people ever to go down in uncertainty tolerance was my mother. I mean, the data is anonymous, but she actually told me because she was worried that it might upset the data. And I was like, what? One time I let her, like, she was like, I want to know what you do. Can I do? And I was like, okay, well, you can come on this course. We're beta testing it. And her tolerance uncertainty went down. But most people that doesn't happen to. She is 82, so maybe it's,
you know. Oh, bless her, that's amazing. Oh yeah. But yes, I do highly recommend it. As someone who has been through it, I can safely say it was an incredible experience and I learned so much. And I think as well, for me, what I really enjoyed was some of these habits I kind of do because of mindfulness, but now I'm like, oh, I do this for this reason. I have like scientific evidence that this works.
Good. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, that's something that's embedded into the course, maybe because it's something I need myself. You know, as a scientist, I often like some validation points. I'm like, okay, if I know this is working on my brain nervous system that I'm in.
Yeah. So what would be your final sort of words of wisdom to our audience, Catherine, about uncertainty? If they had to take anything away from today's conversation, aside from obviously joining uncertainty experts, what is something you really want people to understand about uncertainty?
I think probably the most sort of hopeful thing that, you know, uncertainty is very fundamental to being human beings. However, we have survived, and despite what we might be doing to our planet, we are top of the food chain for a reason. We are incredibly adaptable, agile. You know, we have this amazing imagination. We have gut instinct. You know, we are incredible as a species. And I think the thing that really struck me is asking people really to reflect on their own relationship with uncertainty. You know, 98% of people we found have a negative relationship. They don't really like uncertainty, if they're honest. But that's all of us. You know, that's just very natural because we've never really been taught at school how to navigate uncertainty. But the best thing about uncertainty tolerance as a psychological trait is it's malleable. So it's very, very trainable. And as the uncertainty experts showed, they've naturally learned how to handle it through quite dramatic life events. Mm. You know, we don't want everybody to have to go through dramatic life events, although, of course, lots of us have done, to be able to increase uncertainty tolerance. And once you start increasing uncertainty tolerance, uncertainty suddenly flips from this place of potential anxiety to a place of opportunity. Mm. And seeing that change and how easy it is, or how available it is to people with the right tools, is really exciting.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Catherine. I will, of course, leave all of the show notes for the uncertainty experts so people can come and find you and find the course. But it has been amazing diving into uncertainty with you today.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Make It Thrive, the Company Culture Podcast, with me, your host, Lizzie Benton. If you've enjoyed listening and want to keep up with all things culture, don't forget to subscribe. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to welcoming you back next week.